Anybody who hasn't passed in their assignment has it. Used to say, you know, that
the witness all oral up to that time that they're written down. Now they're just proving that, or the research that they've actually found writing on the caves that were apparently from the Israelites before the Exodus. They were used to slave labor in the salt mines and the copper mines in Palestine. They took them from Egypt up into Palestine. And they actually wrote on the walls of these caves that they dug, mines that they dug, showing that they knew writing. So what Ezra probably did is collate all the manuscripts and the concerns of the law being the most important and purified text probably did the same thing that he did later, destroy the copies. I mentioned that unless Epiphany, Antioch Epiphany is destroyed, there's no record to be burnt in the library. But if he didn't, then that probably carried on down to 70 AD, which everything was destroyed, apparently. Except the Torah, which we talked about the Pentateuch, the Torah, which was taken to Rome. So people said, of course, this was also, as I mentioned, probably a reason to take it from along with the lampstand. The lampstand, the picture you see in all the books and encyclopedias of the lampstand, the picture of the lampstand was taken from Rome. So that was the lampstand that was in Herod's temple. That kind of supports his attention as well as the Torah was taken and probably to keep him from the dwelling. Then it was probably destroyed. 135 AD of the second uprising of Jews, and they were literally put on stakes all the way, the main road all the way to Rome. They were crucified. And I'm imagining they had to take the time to cross the road. People. We read of a lot of their abuses, but they were really a lot. lot of them have a computer very probably. They're mostly fairly they apparently found a synagogue that gets seemed to be reading a lot after the tradition of Ezra. So they interpreted the law in the course of time, both orally and written. They believed that the law Pharisees believe the law can be applied to all situations.
My question was about what you want to know. And then you started talking about being more liberal. Was that Hillel or
Israel? That was the school of Hillel. They were, by liberal, not liberal in the sense that we think of liberal, liberal in the sense that they, as opposed to legalistic, they gave the people hope on freedom. I just mentioned the two schools of the scribes that were predominant in politics, the school of the scribes. Okay. Now, the scribes were founded in the synagogue long before. When Ezra was a scribe, they all described him as the founder of the school of politics. That's a good question. Okay. So principally then, the scribes were the lawyers of the day, because they had more of an interpretation back to the people. They weren't quite as isolated as our lawyers. There's two different words in what I haven't studied about that much in depth, but apparently describing different words and Jared to write that again, and then to show the the Pharisees, the main being separated ones, the separate ones, they were small in number, there were only about 6,000 that we could tell from history. I think that there's been a lot of Pharisees in that place of people, but there's only 6,000. Originally, after Ezra, there the group of scribes that formed, this time it wasn't a distinction of parties. They were called Hasidim, which is H-A-S-I-D-I-M, which means the loyal ones. This is the Hasidim Jews from New York that took the name, and they have to get behind all the political parties in the They look like the trick or treaters. Okay, they split up into two parties. Those who retreated to await for the Messiah and to live a holy life, many of these probably became just various things that later on, or at least one of the people that became started to be seen as part of the category of love. The rest became a political party, and they tried to wield power. There's a lot of power struggle that went on between the two parties prior to the time of Christ. Dealing at different time periods. By Christ's day, what was known as the Pharisees then was primarily the political aspect of it, although they weren't so much interested in politics at that time, since they were under Roman rule and they were enforcing the law, making sure that the law was observed. Their efforts then were, as far as politics go anyway, was control of state religion, not politics in general, but religion that was fenced in that they wanted to control all aspects of politics. After 70 AD, when the Sadducees ceased as a party, and 132 AD, the Zealots, which I'm not going to discuss, but they were that started the uprising in 70 and again in 132 AD. They were kind of the political activists of the day. And they were wiped out, and they're by 200, Judaism and Phariseeism are identical. So what we have today is Judaism. Volume work we have in the Old Testament section in the other library is by Finkelstein, F-I-N-K-L-E-S-T-E-I-N. That gives a good treatment of the title Pharisees. In contrast to the Sadducees, they stress individual observance of the law. Sadducees stress the temple worship, the temple service. They taught that the exile resulted not keeping the law, so they put their meaning on keeping the law and applying it to everyday life. They believe that the interpretation of the law was their job in line, the commission, that led eventually to the oral law contrast to the written law. The oral law, which is mainly what Jesus spoke out against, the abuse of the oral law, codified under Agrippa, which I mentioned yesterday. It's that, you want to grab that yellow book up there on the
shelf?
Yeah. That's the Mishnah there. That's a collection, or the codified collection of their oral law. This was codified by Agrippa, his scribe, after 70 AD. There's a scripture index in the back that it gives the scriptural index to the Old Testament, and sometimes it's just another source. It gets to be an example to see what they do have in there. Because a lot of the quotations that they have go back in there. This goes back earlier than the manuscript that they have. It's quoted by the Testament. So I hope that value is very different. They had determined that the law contained 613 commandments, 248 positive and 365 negative. 613 commandments, 248 positive and 365 negative. And they really jumped on 365. With regard to some of the positive teaching, they emphasize the unity of God as opposed to the polytheism of the day. They emphasize the holiness of God and the ethical necessity of living an ethical life, as they interpret it, of course. And they thought the Israel was the life of God. That's all I'm going to do. The Athenians, they were not a uniform group. They were referred to both by Philo, Joseph, Hippolytus, and others. You don't need to give those names, but Philo and Josephus, Hippolytus is the most historian, and a few other ones, historians, and Christians. So we know they were real people and they exist, but they were a different sect in the group. Some of them were celibate, vegetarians, they didn't eat any animal meat. Some of them, they were all communal, and as far as we know, they were all rural. They were primarily agricultural. However, some of them lived in cities that reasonably they kind of reference to. Can't tell some of the groups today. Some of the stricter sects taught a need for national repentance before the Messiah could come, and in fact, before our baptism. Not as we think of baptism, but the Pharisees' idea of cleansing by water, they immersed in the river, and this is made a field day for liberals, as you can imagine, because they've got John the Baptist getting seen and all that, and so that's what we've got. Well, you can look at that two ways. You can take that view, or you can take the view that God would carry the people in advance, since they predated John, to condition the people to a certain mode. God really doesn't need to come back, and so he undoubtedly John had contact with him, whether he was in the same amount of people, he was a question. Some of them were very ethical in their teaching, very into the product and the wilderness, undoubtedly had contact with him. but if I kind of call somebody and urbanize this and realize I'm not in that day, because that division of people that believe they would be able to realize a lot of that, and there's a lot of people that believe there's so much corruption in the street that the veterans are treated as small groups. Okay, so the Coombrong community then, I mentioned yesterday, a few. This is the first cave of Qumran, Isaiah scroll A and B, or just A or just B, depending on what it is. Okay, and then in the New Testament, we had Q7. That meant the seven scraps that they found in the seventh cave, that they found a bunch of scraps in the jar that they think belong to the New Testament rather than the Old Testament. Those were the file 12, I think it explains all that, some of the implications that that still isn't all unraveled. But if it is, it shows that all major parts of the gospel, of the New Testament, were together, reflected together, somewhere in the section of Revelation, but the major section by 50 AD, it's already started to get started to that. The carbon dating is pretty accurate for about 100 years ago. Okay, they dated it, carbon dated it, 50 BC and 50 AD, and then they found all this. And so it shoots down a whole host of liberal theories about the various books being written after the first century. And that's why when they're quoted with this Q7, Roman numeral 7 here, although they're not quoted in the UBS text in this edition, but they probably will be in future editions once they determine for sure that they're New Testament scraps. One of them is really interesting, the one that says, I think it's in 1st or 2nd Peter, the verse that says, I will always provide means. Kind of raise that up as opposition to the liberal theory that we're going to find. You're a bat hat. You're a bat hat. That was a wadi on the same general area of the south, I guess, on the southwest. That's the screen that drives up in so much. They're still excavating around that area. They're still digging up a lot of stuff. There's some real interesting areas where they think they may have found the, they found Sodom and Gomorrah, I think, some other things they see around them, but some of the cities in the tunnel, I think they found that area. The Dead Sea Scrolls themselves, they go from, they're a collection of all different kinds of writing. They go from the 2nd to 3rd century BC to the 1st century AD. The caves were closed, and mentioned sometime between 70 and 132 AD. When the, most of the, apparently, anyway, the more conservative Greek places, which is where I got to believe that. That's the main theory, and that they took the best manuscripts with them, which are identical to the head. This B, Qumran Isaiah B manuscript, shows that it's been corrected, and where it's been corrected to meet the with an angle of the Masoretic text. And this would back up what Josephus says, that the main text in Jerusalem, all the other copies, was made to conform with that, and that was used as a standard. Just a little bit on those two. The first one is, the first half is Isaiah chapter 1 to 33, is the best text. The second half, of from that 34 to the end of Isaiah, is a lot sloppier text. This is A. It has all of Isaiah. All of Isaiah. Chapters 1 to 33 are a better quality than the last part. Okay, and then B is the best quality of the A or B. B is the best quality. B has fragments of Isaiah 1 to 30 and 38 to 66. These are in the break of the fragments of 1 to 30. textual criticism has some value, and if you get both the A and B manuscript and the version that all agree against the library text, and you weigh that over there, you know, that two is a person to the but that's very rare.
What was the Masoretic text?
Okay, the Masoretic text, we're going to get into that in a second. Masoretic, remember now, the Sophron go from about Maccabees day, the group that collected under them, and the name of the count, and they counted all the letters, and did all kinds of things from that. And they divided up the Bible into the 24 books. Well, the books were probably already established, but into readings that they well, like they had so many they divided into so many readings over the course of the year. You go through Pentateuch and Simeon and writing. Well, it's different than our English Bible. We have 39 books. We have 24. And, but that form is passed on whatever they did then. We don't know what before it, except a lot of it that they thought that they did and found out that in the Qumran scrolls were identical. So apparently that way back. And in any event, what they passed on to us is what we have as far as the only difference is that the first chapter division is added later. That's mainly out of the try and follow along and look up a verse in the lexicon and find out different verse numbers sometimes in the same place in the chapter. I think they corrected that. Their name either means tradition or passed down tradition. On the fence and hedge in text, there's two different theories on that. It doesn't matter what they did. Fence in the text is what we call, what we know now as Masora, tradition and tradition. And Masora is divided into three parts. Okay. The initial Masora, which surrounds the first word of the book, these are comments that surround the first word of the book. Notation, not always comment, it may just be a number or something. For example, a lot of times you'll see this. That means that that's the only place in the whole Testament that form occurs. You'll see that repeated a lot. A lot of it is just numeric notation to describe this comment. What the man is commentary. Other times they give you comments, they give you variants, and I'll get into all of that when we get into the break. I think we'll put that on the shelf and there's some different things that they did. But it's divided into three parts. There's the Masora that surrounds the first word, then there's what they call the marginal Masora, which is of two types. The Masora Harva. Magna is on the lower bottom part of the page. page.
Then, third part, third Masora, third type, divided into three parts. You've got the initial Masora, the marginal Masora, and the Masora final. Same word, just add final at the third. This is that an alphabetical listing at the back of the manuscript, that particular manuscript, comments, so on and so forth. What we're going to be dealing with is number two, Masora, marginal Masora, Parva and the Magnus. We'll be dealing with those together. The other two, could you announce how to spell the topic?
Oh, okay.
Parva, P-A-R-V-A, and Magna, M-A-G-N-A. Masora, M-A-S-O-R-A-H. Finalis, F-I-N-A-L-I-S. So, when we get into bibliography, what I'm going to do is photocopy the page from the passing around, and I'll explain the different comments. What all involved. These are just the areas that are listed in the text. Okay, the Masoretic text itself. This is the text receptive for the Old Testament. All manuscripts date from one text. The Masoretic text, remember, developed from 500 to 1200 AD. Took over from the Sophron. They didn't add anything. All they did is codify. They added the vowels in about 700 AD. Mainly it protects the text against pronunciation and the influence of this language spreading throughout Palestine at that time. And two things I wanted you to remember that they did was they added this. Conserve the text by adding the vowels on it, and that they codified the tradition, which is in the Masora, the two parts of the Masora. Those two things that in the text and they codified the Masora. I mentioned, if you have a handout, I should have gotten that a little bit before. This is Europe-Batnat, or however it's pronounced, I put an arrow between them because that was the text we have there. Go on, look at the Sophron down there. There's a footnote for number one, Rabbi Akiva. Okay, this refers to this period of time I'm talking about now, 70 AD on. Sophron continued up about 500 AD. In Masoretic, there was 512, and they divided, remember, divided into two groups, Tiberias on the Sea of Galilee, and Batman in Babylon. And we have two main families that survived out of this tradition. The Tiberias line was the Asher family, and the Babylon was the Matthew family. I'll hand out there. Okay, I'm going to be talking about the Asher family. They gained prominence over the Babylonian group. The Babylonian group produced the manuscript as well. The chief differences were only in pronunciation. It's not talking about a lot of variants, no different texts or anything. We're talking about mainly pronunciation. Their text survives in copies even today. Some of the very manuscripts in Egypt. But just copies are practically very little use for us. Another question is how accurate copies are. The reason the Asher family gained prominence mainly is due to the support of one individual in the 11th century.
He was the Leonardo da Vinci of his day. He was a Jew, he was a doctor of his day, a medical doctor of his day, a philosopher. He studied medicine, he studied his writings, he studied history of medicine, he studied philosophy, he studied his writings, he studied history, he studied his writings. In other words, he was kind of a universal genius, but he was a Jew, and he was one of the most highly respected Jews of his day. He wrote a lot of books and had a lot of influence. And he endorsed the Escher text as the best text. But we're just talking about pronunciation. Okay, so this is in the 11th century. That's why we have the Escher text primarily, rather than the other. Okay, I'm going to go back. He was in the 11th century. Now, going back on the handout here, Moshe ben Asher, the first Asher that you see there below Tiberius, he was number 5 in the list of the 6 Ashers. Number 3 there, it says that he, in his time, the scrolls were converted to codices. Up to that time there were scrolls, and the largest scroll would have been the Pentateuch, but it wouldn't have been. There was undoubtedly no scroll longer. Isaiah were probably 2 scrolls. They were probably stored separately, maybe different copies got together, but probably one reason why the liberals take off and try to divide Isaiah into 2, because they were stored as 2 copies, 2 maybe different scribes. Copy one or the other, but the same text. When they assigned the copy, one scribe would probably make, if he made a copy of the whole Pentateuch in his lifetime, he would do a good job. One scribe didn't do a lot of different work. It's thought that Ben Asher did the whole Old Testament in his lifetime. Ben Asher was the son. Aaron ben Asher, the son of Moshe ben Asher. Okay. Moshe ben Asher, we have the oldest text, is the Cairo Codex, dated there 895 AD approximately. They don't know for sure. It's of the prophets, his writings of, is only the prophets that survive today. Cairo. Okay, his son then produced the whole Old Testament text. But by converting the codices, we're talking about going to pages of scrolls, or we consider pages of parchments that they're bound together, pages of scrolls. That was a major mistake for today. That was a culmination of about 500 years of labor. Talking about just one person doing all this alone. They built on the foundation of others, all of them. Okay, Aaron ben Asher, then, everything that we have on the Hebrew text today is based on him, except for the Cairo Codex, with the exception of the scraps and the Eman, a few of the other great manuscripts. Now, supposedly, he wrote, if you look under the left there, this hasn't been definitely stated, but the OR-4445 codex, which is under number 7 below, is Genesis 39:20 to Deuteronomy 133 only. It's got his name in the margin, so they assigned it to him, but then his son didn't dispute that. But it dates from around the time that he lived. He didn't read it, now that he has commanded the other codex. Part of the reason they don't believe he did is because for sure he did the Aleppo Codex, which we're talking about in Medicare. And that's the whole Old Testament. Although part of it is Leningrad Codex, the next one on there, is a copy. And it's dated 1008 AD. That's the earliest dated manuscript of the Bible. That's the basis of bibliography. Okay. And there was other copies in existence that Ben Chaim, or Chaim, 1524 AD, made copies very similar to what Erasmus did in his testimony. The copies that he had were almost all identical, except for very fine points. The story was different. His copy was the first printed edition, 1524.
I just learned that.
Okay, it's on my handout there. Under other copies, Ben Chaim, C-H-A-Y-Y-I. Okay, his that became the standard Jewish text. JPS text underneath that was Jewish Publication Society text that we're published to this day. Under there is the Literus edition. That's the English edition of the plain text published by Christian Letters. Okay. So that's the first printed edition. And he admittedly didn't have, he had copies in front of him. He didn't have the original Ben Asher manuscript, but he had copies of it. Okay, the only original copy that we know for sure is the Aleppo Codex there, which was written that around 900 AD. And underneath that, you'll see the Hebrew University Bible. That was not available except for scholars who view it. It was published by the Hebrew University of Tel Aviv, or Jerusalem, excuse me. And they published the whole codex with the critical apparatus and any other copies of that issue. The whole story behind the Aleppo Codex would be interesting. They refused to give it out to the people because it was very part of the story of the Arab Uprising. Okay, then also Ginsburg here, which is the basis for Rotherham, he based his text on Ben Chaim and other copies. He didn't have any access to original Ben Asher text either. And he made changes in the text where the Masoretes actually only put it in the Masorah in the margin. He actually made changes that he felt should be changed. Rotherham notes those in the bottom. It says, so Ginsburg says, or Ginsburg thinks, and so on. See if you read that apparatus. Snape used built on Ginsburg's text, but he also used other texts, which goes back to other copies again. That is replaced the Literus edition as the English published Snape's text instead of the Literus edition. That's the one that we have. We grabbed the little kind of black one right there. Yeah, that's the Snape edition there. The other one, the other black one you have there, is the Jewish Publication Society text. Yeah. Now, Ben Chaim, the only difference is the Masorah is different. There is a few other differences. And that assignment that you have, that I gave you, where you had two words joined together like this, and you had, it was over all, or over all, if you had this line between it, it was pronounced as one unit, and if you didn't, then you could pronounce it as a separate unit. The difference made in that assignment would be to say it magnified your name over all by word, or it magnified that name over all by name by word. They use the common English, they use that dash. That's not required, but that was one of the other differences between Ben Napkin and Ben Asher. They had correspondence back and forth, these two families did. There was a feud going between them. And Ben Asher undoubtedly really took advantage of Christian and Ben Napkin. A lot of it. So these are the basic texts that we've got. The Hebrew University Bible, Biblia Hebraica, JPS text, Literus edition, Ginsburg, which we don't have a copy of, but it's Rotherham, and Snape. So we have all of these in the library, that's why I put them on the handout. Okay, now the Aleppo Codex is the original copy. I'm going to that next time. I want to start it now. But it has an interesting history.
question.
What was the Cairo Codex?
Cairo Codex
is just on the prophecy written by Ben Asher's dad. The only thing that we have by another Asher other than Ben Asher. His dad, as far as we know, he spent most of his life converting the scroll to Codex. Except that he wrote this Cairo Codex on the prophet, which I think it says under number 3, footnote number 3. And that is in the book. Where the Aleppo Codex, we'll see where it starts. It's interesting. I think the first word of it is cursed. It was destroyed by fire. It was chosen, about 25% of it was destroyed by fire.
They already had copies before.
No, there's no copies. What they did, they used other copies to fill in the gap.
Fred, is there one book in the library here that could give you a lot of this information from the techniques of Pharisees and that sort of
thing? I don't think it represents a lot of scrap in the field. It's amazing how little it is. Multi-purpose tools for Bible study probably get more than one book, and that's being in the Word. But there's the rest of it, a lot of it is stuff that's so current that it's in the supplement of the Old Testament text, in interpreters' dictionaries, or in some of the archaeological journals. It's just not in one concise place.
Write a book.
Well, it's a